This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We start this full hour of national politics and your phone calls, questions, and comments with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, who joins us now. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Michael. By the way, last time I was on the show, I was there in person, and I love being with you and everybody else at WBXU. Thank you so much for that.
You're taller in person than I expected, so that was exciting.
Well, especially when I'm sitting.
We also have our friends in the studio, as usual. With me now are Miami University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, thank you for coming back down.
Thanks for having me.
And WVXU Senior Political Analyst Howard Wilkinson. Hello, Howard.
Hello, Michael.
And we want you to join us, too. So give us a call. We want to hear your thoughts about the Democratic primary. We want to hear about the general election. We want to know if you're a Democratic voter. Are you blue no matter who? Or do you have some problems with some of the candidates? Please call us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We will look for your comments and tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. But as always, when Ken Rudin joins us, and this is a special month because this is twice in the same month, it's a double dose of Rudin.
Oh my God.
We start with the trivia question. Ken, what is the question this month?
By the way, speaking of a double dose of Rudin, is Michael Pence in charge of that too? Okay. The trivia question
injected
is,
into my veins.
Yes. Who was the last candidate to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday but got fewer delegates?
Ooh. So presidential candidate to receive the most raw votes, I assume, on Super Tuesday,
sure,
but fewer delegates. Could be of either party?
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh, okay. Great question. If you know the answer, give us a call at 513-419-7100. And if you are the lucky winner, Ken, tell them what will soon arrive in their mailbox.
They get a very official political junkie campaign button.
Ooh, that's awesome. And of course, Dr. Bloom and Mr. Wilkinson here will play along as well, and we'll see if they can get the answers. We'll give them a little bit of time to think about it. And before we dive into the serious issues of the day, like the race for president, I've got a trivia question, too. And I don't mean to steal Ken's thunder, but I just want to note that one of the final Jeopardy questions this week was this. This is a real final Jeopardy question from this week. This sandwich, oh, I'm sorry, the final category was fast food.
Yeah.
And here was the answer. The sandwich was first sold in 1962 as an attempt to give the many Catholics of Cincinnati something to eat on Fridays during Lent. Do you all know the question?
What is the fish sandwich?
Yeah, what is the Filet-O-Fish? That's right. So I only bring that into the program because, well, not only did Frisch's have something to say that McDonald's was not first, Cincinnati-based Frisch's claims to have been first years prior to that in launching the fish sandwich, but today is another Cincinnati delicacy day that's being celebrated across the country. It's National Chili Day, and Ken, when he comes into town like he did earlier this month, it gorges himself on this stuff. So, Ken, I'm sorry you can't be here in person with us on this most important High Holy Day.
Well, the way I celebrate National Chili Day is I take out a picture of General Pinochet.
And that's some international political humor for everyone, and I deserve it, frankly. So, happy Chili Day, everyone. Enjoy your conies and your five ways. Now, let's talk politics. So, there's a new Monmouth University poll out ahead of Saturday's South Carolina race. And this is the state of the race in that state ahead of the votes on Saturday. Former Vice President Joe Biden up 20 points, according to the Monmouth poll. He has 36% of the vote compared to Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders at 16 and businessman Tom Steyer with 15 right now. So, Ken, the forecast suggests a Biden win finally for his campaign. But what kind of win does he need on Saturday?
Boy, if the final numbers are anything close to that Monmouth poll, that is good news for Joe Biden, given the fact that he has done so poorly in the first three contests in Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada. I mean, he finished second in Nevada, but again, you know, the first two, he was in low single digits, way, way back. And for somebody who was the ostensible front runner for so long, he needs it. Now, he's always talked about his rapport with African-American voters They, you know, off the fact that he was the loyal vice president to Barack Obama for 8 years. Yesterday, Joe Biden got the endorsement of the most influential Democrat in the Palmetto State, and that's Congressman Jim Clyburn, the highest-ranking African-American in Congress, and that was big. And again, Biden was arguing from the beginning that, you know, it's one thing to not do well in the lily-white states of Iowa and New Hampshire, but you know, if you look at how Hillary Clinton defeated Bernie Sanders in 2016 for the nomination, it was based on the support of black voters. That's what Biden absolutely needs if he's going to be competitive in the race for the nomination.
And we should note, it's just a few days later that Super Tuesday takes place, and they're all going to be spread out across the country in a variety of different types of states with different demographics. Some will have regular primaries, some will have caucuses. It's going to be a mixed bag of results. But let me get the same question into Dr. Bloom here from Miami University. Your thoughts on what Joe Biden needs on Saturday?
I think Joe Biden would be happy with a big win like that, a win that put Sanders behind him around the same margin that he was behind Sanders in Nevada. That kind of win might help consolidate the rest of the moderate support behind Biden, because it's important to remember that even though Sanders is doing better than everyone else, it's barely. It's because over half the support is spread out amongst all of these other candidates.
It seems, Howard, that there are multiple candidates fighting for that moderate lane and claiming that they need to have that lane cleared, but they're all doing well enough to keep going. And so there is this traffic jam in the center lane of this race. What does Saturday do to that?
If Biden can get on a little roll, starting with South Carolina, and I've seen some polling, like, say, out of Texas, where he's starting to catch up with Bernie and might actually overtake him and starts piling up those wins, then he becomes the moderate candidate. I mean, that's all there is to it. You know, he's the one who's got the name recognition, the money. And as you pointed out, the support from African-American voters, voters of color, because that is absolutely crucial in a fall campaign. They must have that.
And we want you to join us and weigh in on this as well. 513-419-7100. If you have a hot take on the issues of the day related to the presidential primary, or if you have an answer to Ken Rudin's question this month, which is, who was the last candidate to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday but got fewer delegates? 513-419-7100. There was a debate in South Carolina this week, Ken Rudin, and the makeup of the race was a little different for this debate. We've had some votes cast and a new front runner in Bernie Sanders, but we also had former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the stage. First, I would like your take on how you think Bernie Sanders did as the front runner, or whether you think maybe Michael Bloomberg was able to assume much of that criticism, giving Bernie a pass.
Well, that's very interesting, because as the front runner, and it's fair to say that Bernie Sanders has to be considered the front runner, considering the fact that he basically tied in Iowa, won New Hampshire, although it was close, and won pretty handily in Nevada, and he's leading in the national polls, that would make him a front runner, at least as of now. But the fact is, he went into that debate as the front runner, but he was not the object of everybody's criticism. Now, Pete Buttigieg did go after him on a lot of things, basically on how do you pay for your Medicare for All plan, which is he's still been vague about, and about his comments about Castro, Cuba, and communism, which does sound like a red-baiting a chant from the 1950s, but it's still legitimate. The fact is that Bernie Sanders has expressed sympathy for these kind of socialist revolutions, if not communist revolutions, that may be anathema to many Democratic voters. But most of the attacks, at least coming from Elizabeth Warren, who seems unable or unwilling to attack Bernie, she'll go after Michael Bloomberg. I thought she decimated him in the Las Vegas debate. Now, last week, I think in Charleston, Michael Bloomberg did a bit better. He was more explanatory about what his positions were, but he still took a lot of battering from Warren. And, you know, what's fascinating to me is you watch those Bloomberg commercials and you think, wow, this guy's a great candidate. But then you watch him on stage and you say, wow, what happened to the charisma? What happened to the you know, logical arguments against Donald Trump, you don't see it.
And I do want to touch on Bernie Sanders' comments about those foreign dictators, and we'll follow up on that in just a moment. But let me throw it over to Howard now. What did you think of the way the debate went down this week, and whether Bernie did a solid job as the current front runner?
Well, actually, I think Bernie did pretty well. I mean, he just kind of stood there and took the body blows, and he, you know, smiled and kind of joked about it. And you know, you can do that when you're on top. And, you know, I do think, and I know you want to talk about this a little more, but the criticism about Cuba and Castro can really be significant in this thing, particularly in Florida, which they are going to have to win.
I read that the city of Miami is sponsoring some sort of rally in response to what Bernie Sanders has said, that were these remarks that were interpreted to be favorable towards the way that Fidel Castro operated in Cuba.
Right, and that is a must-win state, I think, anyway, and in the fall campaign for the Democrats.
And Dr. Bloom, let me ask you about that, because Bernie is receiving some criticism about high praise for a Cuban dictatorship and also for his honeymoon to the USSR and some comments that he's made about Russia that were favorable to that country. In a general election, how exactly can the Republicans use that against him when we've heard such high praise from President Trump for Vladimir Putin in Russia, Kim Jong-un in North Korea, Mubarak in Turkey?
I think that is a different kind of contest, and maybe those criticisms would sting him a little bit less. China, though, is something we haven't mentioned yet, but that was something he was specifically asked about because he's insisted that the leader of China is not a dictator. The answer he gave was, to me, very surprising. It was because the Chinese leader responds to the Politburo, which Bernie insinuated is a democratically elected sort of governing body, which is frankly not the case. China is a country that Trump, however we feel about his trade policies, has kind of taken a stand against. So there are a few areas where there could be a sharp distinction between the two that might not favor Sanders.
So, Ken, is this what the fall campaign could come down to if it's President Trump versus Senator Sanders, and that we as an electorate have to decide which dictators they're cozying up to or praising that we can find tolerable?
Well, you know, if you looked at the night, it's hard to think of it this way, but back in 2016, when the choice was Trump versus Hillary Clinton, they were the most polarizing nominees in the history of polling. Both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton were disliked by more people than any other choice in history. 2020, if it's Trump and Sanders, could be even more polarizing. But expanding on what Rachel just said, which this is what fascinates me, we're talking about, well, you know, how could Donald Trump attack Bernie Sanders' embrace or affection for Fidel Castro, given the fact that he supports Putin and you know, all the authoritarian dictators around the country? It's like when Donald Trump brought the women who were accusing Bill Clinton of sexual inappropriateness to the debates. Donald Trump, who has so many accusations against him, given the Access Hollywood comments and all the women who have accused him of inappropriate behavior, and yet Donald Trump, with no sense of irony at all, brings, you know, the Paula Joneses of the world to the debates to point out to Hillary Clinton that her husband was no good. There is no shame in what Donald Trump does. So even if Donald Trump can say the same thing about dictators, that won't stop him from going after Bernie Sanders. And for that reason, I really think that Sanders is vulnerable in that sense in a November campaign.
513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation. We'll take a phone call now. Let's go to Percy. Hi, Percy. What's your question or comment?
Oh, I just wanted to say that I'm an African-American in the area, and I voted for – I'm a card-carrying Democrat. I usually vote Democratic, but I voted for McCain in 08, mainly.
Have we lost Percy?
Because I think I believe that we need to go to more of a moderate candidate.
Hey, Percy, just a moment. Percy, you broke up a little bit there. You were saying that you voted for McCain back in 08, and I think you were telling us who you're supporting now.
So I'm supporting Biden now.
Why?
Because I think he's the best moderate candidate. My second choice would be Amy Klobuchar, in that she is very sharp, but I don't think I could deal with another Hillary Clinton issue. And my third choice would probably be Michael Bloomberg, but Stop and Frisk kind of rubs me the wrong way.
All right, Percy, we really appreciate the call and the perspective. Thanks so much for doing that. So there's a call from a voter who just expressed support for three of those candidates that are clogging up that centrist lane. And this is something that voters going to the polls on Saturday and then again on Tuesday are going to have to navigate, Howard, because if voters themselves are recognizing this as an issue, they've got to be the ones who determine which candidate they want to put up to go against Bernie, ultimately, in the finals of this primary. Right. So how are these moderate candidates working to secure that among the electorate?
Well, I think the one thing that they all are trying to do and to persuade voters in these states is that, look, the moderate center is where we're going to win. The object of this election is to defeat Donald Trump and to win back the White House. And I think it's going to start really becoming even more of a fight between the left and the center of the Democratic Party. And people are going to have to decide, okay, if we do nominate Bernie Sanders, can he defeat Donald Trump? And that is an open question. I don't think anybody knows the answer to that yet.
And I mean, really, we don't know the answer to whether any of these candidates can beat Donald Trump.
True.
It's very, I mean, it's still early in the primary, much less in the general election, Dr. Bloom. So how do these candidates manage to make themselves stand out as the one you should trust? Because if the country wants somebody in the center, then I'm the one.
Well, there are actually some polls that ask voters how they would feel about each of these candidates as compared to Trump. Sanders doesn't necessarily do great in those polls, and we should take them with a grain of salt, of course. The most important thing for a candidate to do if they want to beat Sanders and Trump is to build a coalition, which Sanders has not done. There's very little evidence he's picked up substantial support from people who didn't already like him. And there are a lot of voters, moderate Republicans, people in the middle, many Democrats who probably want another option. And just anecdotally, from talking to a lot of Republicans I know in a lot of states, their response is pretty similar to the caller's. They're thinking that Biden is maybe the person who could give you Bloomberg-style policies but get them through. They like Amy, but she's not doing so well. Bloomberg, they like, but he's not debating so well.
And Ken, let me bring you in on that, because there may be a suggestion that Senator Sanders has a ceiling in terms of primary support, but there's also a limited amount of time for others to make their case.
That's one reason why this reminds me so much of 2016, when Republicans said that Donald Trump couldn't possibly win in November, given his baggage, his personal life, that Jeb Bush was leading in all the polls. And Jeb Bush, once he started debating and once he started campaigning, everybody said, similar to what they're saying about Joe Biden for a long time, why did we say that he was the front runner? He's not a great candidate. So for all the criticism you have about Bernie Sanders, as people saying, well, he can't win in November and he can't expand his base. Well, Donald Trump really hasn't expanded his base either, but he's kept his base. There are people who are fanatic about him. There are people who are fanatic about Bernie Sanders. And, you know, unlike what happened in 2016 with the Republicans, who decided too late that they needed to for other candidates to drop out and stop Trump, which didn't work, you even wonder now, even after only three states, but of course there's a fourth on Saturday and then another 14 on Tuesday, if the Democrats don't coalesce behind one candidate, it will be too late to stop Bernie Sanders as well.
Well, national intelligence is appearing to suggest that there is one entity that seems to have support for both President Trump and Senator Sanders, that entity being Russia. And we're going to talk about that next. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our full hour of national politics and your phone calls. We are joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, hello.
Hi, Michael.
And we have in the studio with me, Miami University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, thanks again for being with us.
You're welcome.
And WVXU Senior Political Analyst, Howard Wilkinson. Hello, Howard.
Hello, Michael.
And the number to call us to join the conversation, which is slightly different than our fun drive number, though we wouldn't be offended if you called that one by mistake, it's 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join this conversation, let's take a quick phone call now. I've got, is it Mary Ann or Marianta on the line?
It's Marianti, but
oh,
however.
I apologize. It's a lovely name.
It's complicated to pronounce.
Well, please go ahead with your question or comment, Marianti.
So I wanted to make a clarification. At the beginning of this conversation, you were talking about the statements the debaters made about the Chinese president and his responsiveness to the Politburo. And you stated that Bernie Sanders was the one saying that he was responsive to the Politburo and that was adequate. It was actually Michael Bloomberg who said that. And Bernie Sanders directly countered that and said why the Politburo, who are they responsive to, and was very clearly arguing against that point. And so I think it's very important to clarify that so we don't make this big fabrication about Bernie Sanders being, you know, supportive of dictatorships.
That is absolutely correct. It was Bloomberg who said that.
But respectfully, there's a difference between Bloomberg saying that the leader is responsive to a constituency as in a business sense, and then Bernie insinuating that the Politburo is somehow elected or democratically representative, which is the comment I was making.
But I think the charge that was made against the question was whether President Xi was a dictator, and Bloomberg is on record of saying that he is not. I think that's how that conversation began during the debate.
Marianti, thank you so much for your phone call. We appreciate it very much. Always feel free to give us a call. Challenge the comments you hear on this program at 513-419-7100. Next on the line is Joe. Hello, Joe. What's your question or comment?
Oh, actually, I had a guess for the trivia question.
Oh, awesome. Let me remind everyone what the question is, and Ken, stand by. The question was, who was the last candidate for president to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday, but who got fewer delegates? Go ahead, Joe.
I think it was Hillary Clinton back in 2008, because she was getting better votes than Barack Obama, but he ended up winning in all the right states contests and got more delegates.
All right, Joe, let's hear what Ken says. Is it Hillary Clinton 2008?
Nope, not on Super Tuesday. She got more delegates, although Barack Obama did win more states.
Oh, Joe, that was a great guess, though. If you want to try again, give us a call at 513-419-7100. Next on the line is Henry. Hi, Henry. How are you? What's your question or comment?
Hi. I actually just have a comment about the Democratic candidates and who I'm willing to vote for. I am much more interested in voting for Sanders or Warren over Buttigieg or Biden or Bloomberg. Their policies are just more beneficial for my family. I have a large family, and they're more aggressive when it comes to health care and protecting the environment and climate change. I just don't see that in the more traditional candidates.
All right, Henry, we appreciate that very much. Thank you so much for calling and offering your perspective. If you'd like to join us, 513-419-7100. We'll go back to the phone lines in just a moment. But I want to bring the conversation back to what we were saying just before our little development break. We did get word in recent days, just before the Nevada caucus, that the Russians were back at it again and trying to sow discord in the election. We know that they supported President Trump previously and to some degree Bernie Sanders in the previous primary as well. It looks like they're back at it this time around. Ken, does that mean anything to anyone anymore?
Well, you know, something and the word love is put in quotations. I love the way the Trump administration has responded to this news. When they first had a briefing on Capitol Hill before the House Intelligence Committee, they said that Russia is clearly working on behalf of Donald Trump. Donald Trump hated that story. He got rid of his head of his national intelligence. He picked the ambassador to Germany to run the intelligence department with absolutely no intelligence, capital I or small I, at all. And he hated that kind of news. But when it was also revealed that the Russians were working on behalf of Bernie Sanders, as they did in 2016, because they didn't want Hillary Clinton to be the nominee, the Republicans went ballistic on that and said, look, the Russians are out, you know, to be backing Bernie Sanders because they feel he's the weakest. So they cherry-picked the information. They still ignore the fact that Russia is working on behalf, or at least trying to manipulate social media to benefit Donald Trump. But they love the story about Bernie Sanders. Do I think it's effective? Look, I mean, Bernie Sanders, you can see him shrugging his shoulders. But the ultimate thing is this, is that so there are so many supporters of Bernie Sanders, and I've spoken to so many of them, who say that if he is not the nominee, and of course if he's not the nominee because the nomination was stolen from him, but if he's not the nominee, many of them are going to sit home in November. And of course there are a lot of moderates who say if Bernie Sanders is the nominee, we'll sit home in November because he's too extreme for us. So whatever it means, it just means that it's sowing confusion among the electorate, especially in the Democratic Party. And it's not Bernie Sanders' fault. It's the fact that Russia is trying to sow confusion and make people less appreciative and understanding of what's going on in politics. And the more discouraged you get, the less likely you are to go out and vote.
Howard, why would the Russians want Bernie Sanders to be the Democratic nominee?
Because he's the easiest for they see him as the easiest for Donald Trump to beat. That, you know, he could win against Bernie Sanders. I think Ken's right. Generally speaking, I think the Russians just want to sow all kinds of confusion everywhere they can possibly do it, whether it's in the minds of Democratic voters or even Republican voters. I see a lot of people on social media who are Trump supporters who are jumping on this Sanders, you know, being the candidate of the Russians, and you know, they're just running with this thing, and obviously Trump is running the other direction.
And Dr. Bloom, that is something that we're definitely seeing, but we're also seeing the argument from other candidates in the field that Bernie Sanders is most likely to lose to Trump, and not only that, we'll lose the House, we won't win back the Senate, he will sink the down-ballot races. What do you think of their analysis of their competitor here?
Well, that was certainly Pete Buttigieg's contention. I think he's right that there were some districts that Democrats took in 2018 that generally aren't Democratic. And in those places, the voters might prefer a more moderate nominee. And since we do see this kind of down ballot effect from presidential nominees, you could see something there. There are also districts that have been taken by a lot more progressive Democratic candidates. So there's quite a range. I think maybe Pete went a little bit too far in his dire predictions. But something like the Russia news, that might not really have that much of a distortion effect on the entire race if we end up with two eventual major party candidates who have the same criticism.
Ken, we've heard, you know, that the 2018 blue wave that put the Democrats back in power in the House was credited to basically suburban women in a lot of districts that would typically go Republican. What are the possibilities that those suburban female voters stick with the Democrats if Bernie Sanders is the nominee?
I mean, nobody really knows. The fact is that Bernie Sanders probably has more loyal or more fervent supporters than any of the other candidates, and that is a thing in his favor should he be the nominee. But Michael, you're absolutely right. When the Democrats picked up all those House seats in 2018 to put Nancy Pelosi back as Speaker, they were all in mostly the districts that either were won by Trump, had been held by Republicans for a long time, and ran many candidates who may have been pro-gun or pro-life or something apart from the liberal wing of the Democratic Party. But that's been Nancy Pelosi's problem all along, because she has to satisfy the groups. And that was the argument against impeachment by these people for so long, saying that it may not fly in my district because they could be very socially conservative or views on social policies that may be more conservative than not. So I kind of think that those districts that Nancy Pelosi picked up in 2018 may not be prone to voting for Bernie Sanders. It's one thing for Sanders to do very well in caucuses, which he did very well against Hillary Clinton in 2016, won in very conservative states. Whether he could do that in November, it's still very, very questionable.
Okay, I want to continue to talk about constituency. We got an email from Kay, who says her Republican in-laws voted for Trump last time, but may vote for Biden or Bloomberg, but never Sanders. And before this program, I'd emailed out a series of tweets to you, Ken, about that were composed by Michael Harriet, a journalist who writes for The Root, an African-American-oriented news website. And I found some of his observations to be interesting to discuss here in the way that white voters might be looking at a Bernie Sanders candidacy compared to black voters. Because while we are talking about Joe Biden leading among the African-American voting population, that's not true among younger African-American voters. They tend to favor Bernie Sanders more than Joe Biden. But let me read a little bit about what Michael Harriet said in this tweet thread. He says, "You think black folks are the ones who are afraid of socialism? I don't know if you're aware of this, but since 1619, capitalism has worked out for like three black people: Oprah, Madam C.J. Walker, and Diddy. But what a lot of white liberals fail to realize is that a lot of their skin folk know Trump is a lying, dumb, corrupt, inept president. However, he hasn't materially affected their lives in any way. Those people would quickly vote for a regular run-of-the-mill moderate Dem over Trump. But when you talk about raising taxes, upsetting the status quo, and redistribution of wealth, white America, even the ones with no wealth, get a little nervous, which makes black America very nervous. And when white America gets a cold, black folks get the coronavirus." Ken, your thoughts on that?
Wow. Well, you know something, that's a fascinating, that actually, I hope everybody listened to what you just read, and people, there's a lot of thought-provoking thoughts there, but one thing I will say is it is a mistake to talk about how monolithic the black vote is. And of course, it's not. And if you look at the polls, that while the older black African-American voters, as we see in South Carolina, as we see with Jim Clyburn, will gravitate to Joe Biden's, many of the younger black and Latino and Asian voters are just tired of status quo, and they're ready for something to a radical change. The question is whether that constituency is large enough to prevail in November, because the Trump people will stay with Trump. It's whether the Democrats, who have more numbers, can get together on a candidate like Bernie Sanders, and that's really very questionable.
The phone lines are packed. We're going to get to everybody who's waiting on the phone lines in just a moment. And I have to say, it doesn't look like we have a lot of people calling with this answer yet. You've asked a tough question this month, Ken. We've got a lot of people ready to share their perspective on the primary. But I'll remind everybody what the question is. Who was the last presidential candidate to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday, but who got fewer delegates? Okay. And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue our full hour of national politics with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, thanks for sticking around with us again.
Thank you, Michael.
In the studio with me are Miami University Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, hello.
Hi.
NWVXU senior political analyst Howard Wilkinson. Hi, Howard.
Hey, Michael.
513-419-7100 is the number to call. We have a full board of questioners now. Let's go to the phone lines now. Tim is up first. Hi, Tim. What's your question or comment? Do we have Tim on the line?
Yes, Tim's here.
Okay, Tim, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I don't think a moderate can beat Trump in November. I think that both sides of the political spectrum right now, people on both sides are definitely gravitating towards more radical candidates. And I think, especially as a Democrat, voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012, that he promised change. So, you know, so much change. And I think after having him for 8 years and only seeing so much change happen, people are looking for candidates that can offer more change than that.
Tim, we appreciate that take very much. Thanks so much for your phone call. We appreciate you listening. Next up on the line is Daisy. Hi, Daisy. What's your question or comment? Do we have Daisy on the line? All right, Daisy, we'll try to come back to you. Let's see who might be up next. It's James. Hi, James. What's your question or comment?
My question is, after Tuesday, we go through the primaries, what's going to happen if there's real no clear frontrunner, like if the states kind of go in different directions? Because that would be kind of an interesting outcome as a social studies teacher to watch.
All right, James, we appreciate that comment. Ken, what does happen? If after Tuesday, I mean, we're going to have Michael Bloomberg on the ballots for the first time as well, is going to throw a wrench into some people's plans. I mean, up to six candidates win a state possibly on Tuesday.
That's absolutely possible. I mean, you have Elizabeth Warren perhaps winning in Massachusetts. You have Amy Klobuchar winning in Minnesota. You have Bernie Sanders doing very well in California, Texas. It could be very interesting. But actually, James's question is very important because we all have this fantasy. I'll save those other fantasies at another time. But this fantasy is that there's a brokered convention that no candidate has enough delegates on the first ballot to win the nomination outright. That hasn't happened since 1952 with Adlai Stevenson winning on the third ballot. But the fact is, and this became an issue in the debate the other day, which I thought was interesting and perhaps a little hypocritical of Bernie Sanders. The candidates were asked, what happens if no candidate has a majority of the delegates after the first ballot? Should that person get whoever has the most delegates, or should they get a majority? And everybody said they should get a majority because that's what the rules are. And Bernie Sanders said, no, whoever has the most delegates. What Bernie Sanders fears the most is that if no candidate has enough for a majority to win the nomination outright on the first ballot, then on the second ballot, those famous superdelegates, which usually had a big say in the early primaries, but no longer this time. This time they were relegated to the second round. If nobody has a majority, then superdelegates will step forward, and they may be the people who say, well, you know something, I don't know if Bernie Sanders could win in November. And if they overrule the so-called will of the people, which may have Bernie Sanders out in front, there could be some very uncomfortable times for the Democrats at the convention in Milwaukee.
Howard, I recall you covered the 1952 Adlai Stevenson convention, did you not? I kid.
I was born that year, though.
All right. Yeah, I've always wondered. I never had the guts to ask.
Yeah, that's true.
You're a veteran reporter for sure. What would a contested convention do to the Democrats in the fall?
Well, it would be one big mess. Now, this is like the dream of political reporters for decades now, you know, that they get to cover an actual contested convention. You know, most of these things are just snooze fest and 4-day commercials for the parties. I think it would, you know, if superdelegates, as Ken suggests, come charging in and said, "Okay, everybody, sit down, kids. We're gonna fix this. Here's who your nominee is going to be." There would be real trouble. And that's it's at that point that you have to worry about the Bernie Sanders supporters, not just the people at the convention, but across the country, just staying home and not participating.
All right. Let's go back to the phone lines.
Can I just add one thing to that? But
sure.
We kind of think, given the fact that you have so much at stake on Tuesday, I don't want to count anybody out, but it's hard to say if Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar are not winning, and we don't know where they're going to win except for their home states.
Right.
If they're not winning in the primaries, I don't know if there's a long life for these candidates. And so you may only have Sanders, Bloomberg, and perhaps Biden. In other words, the longer we go, the fewer candidates that we'll have, and that would mean that it gives an opportunity for the leading candidate to sweep up most of the delegates, which is what happened with Trump in 2016.
All right, we've just got a little bit of time left. I want to make sure we get to all the phone calls, so we'll enter the lightning round now and try to keep our answers terse and precise. So let's go. I've actually got two Johns on the line, so if you're listening, Johns, the first John I'm going to go to is the one who talks about which candidate could carry the Congress as well. So if you are that John, hello, John, and what's your question or comment?
Well, which candidate can carry the Senate and the House and or flip the Senate and also entice the never-Trump Republicans and independents to join onto the candidate? And that really is a tremendous question. I don't know the answer. I'll take the listen online.
Thank you so much for the call, John. Rachel, let's start with you on that one.
The answer to that question might be more than one candidate, as in there may be different candidates who could do each of those things. And for the Senate, we'd have to look at the demographics of each of the states where someone's up and so forth.
A lot of Republicans on the ballot this time around. So, yes. I mean, if ever there were a time, this is the time. But the states are challenging for those incumbent Republicans who may be targeted by Democrats. Well, they're challenging for the Democratic challengers.
Yes, and they could be more they could be weaker in terms of a moderate Democratic candidate.
All right, let's go to Rick now. Rick, what's your question or comment? Do we have Rick on the line?
Yeah, hi. Yeah, this is Rick. So I'm going to switch my ballot. I've always voted Republican, except when I voted for Jimmy Carter. And this is the way I feel about it. But I'm switching my ballot. I'm getting a Democratic ballot. I'm voting for Mike Bloomberg. And my main concern and my worry is, and it's been bugging me for a long time, it's the amount of money the government keeps borrowing and spending, and it's getting out of control. I remember when these Tea Party people used to claim Obama was driving the car, American off the cliff, and Trump's been spending money worse than they did, and the deficit's just growing and growing, and these candidates like all of them, every one of them except Bloomberg, seem to be want to expand the role of the federal government, and that'll just increase a lot of spending. And not only that, you know, eventually we'll have to pay it all back. And it seems to me like you can't keep running deficits up $1 trillion every year. And if Sanders gets in, there's going to be $2 trillion a year or more. You know, everybody's going to be taxed double or triple what they're being taxed now. I just can't see the country going forward. You know, if that's what happens.
Rick, thank you so much for your phone call. Ken, this is something that doesn't get talked about a lot on the campaign trail, and it's the spending that the government is doing.
Which is so funny about the Republicans, you're absolutely right. The Tea Party went ballistic about Barack Obama and the deficits and all their spending. And, of course, it was Bill Clinton who basically reduced that deficit. But to talk about the big spending Democrats, and then Donald Trump comes in and they're with the tax cuts and the giveaways to the rich. I mean, what the deficit is approaching is record numbers, and that's no longer an issue among Republicans. That is startling.
But it will be, I guess, when there's a Democratic president again.
That's right. That's important. Oh, yeah.
But I think it's an issue among a lot of Republican voters who I hear talking about it. You know, and they may be the never Trump voters that
could vote for one of the middle lane Democrats if they're nominated.
Right.
Okay. And a lot of more moderate Democrats, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
513-419-7100 is the number to answer the trivia question. We've got one on the line with a possible answer to this question from Ken Rudin this month. Who was the last candidate to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday, but who got fewer delegates? Let's go to John now. John, you've got an answer to the question?
Yes, Michael. Hi.
Hi.
I'm from Covington.
Oh, awesome.
Hi. The show's you really brought the show into your own, sir.
I appreciate that, John, fellow Covington neighbor.
Very good. Yeah, very good. My guess is my long shot, John Anderson, and I doubt that's accurate.
Isn't he the guy who sang Straight Tequila Night?
Well, I don't think it's the same one.
Oh, a different John Anderson. Okay.
Yeah. No, a different one.
So that was 1980, which, since you confessed your birth year, that was my birth year, Howard. Okay. So now everyone knows how old we are.
Yeah.
Ken, was it John Anderson in 1980?
Oh, no. In Super Tuesday, 1980, Ronald Reagan went berserk. He basically swept up and won the nomination on Super Tuesday.
John, great guest. And hey, we got to run. We appreciate the call. I hope you'll call back next time when we have a little more time to chat and take more questions. I know you wanted to ask a question as well, but we've got to start to wrap this up. Thank you so much for your comment and for listening. I do want to get one last question into the panel as we wrap up in our final minute here. After Super Tuesday, what candidates are still standing moving on from there on the Democratic side? We'll start with you, Dr. Bloom.
Bloomberg has enough money to keep standing. Biden, I'd say probably. Bernie, definitely.
Bloomberg, Biden, and Bernie. What do you think, Howard?
Yeah, I agree.
Same three?
Yeah, sure.
Ken, what do you think?
I agree. Especially if Elizabeth Warren loses or comes close in Massachusetts, I think it's those three.
So it will come down to Bloomberg, Biden, and Bernie. Now, Ohio votes on March 17.
Yes.
Right.
Howard, who wins Ohio?
Right now, I would not put it past Bloomberg, just because Bloomberg is so very well organized in Ohio, and nobody else is, except Elizabeth Warren to a certain extent, and I'm not sure she'll still be around by then.
Ken, is that what you think as well? Do you think Bloomberg
takes
it like big
debate
Ohio?
There's a big debate on March 15th. Yeah, that will be crucial. If Bloomberg can't acquit himself in the debate, then he could be in trouble.
And I think we're doing the Political Junkie again sometime during that week as well.
Yeah. We need a trivia answer.
Oh, my God. What was the correct answer? Gosh, Ken, thank you so much.
The last candidate to receive the most votes on Super Tuesday but get fewer delegates, Jesse Jackson in 1988.
He got
the most votes.
That's the year I was born.
Oh, that's enough. Get out of here.
But Michael Dukakis got three more delegates.
What'd you say, Howard?
No, I actually did think of Jesse, but I put Hillary down.
Oh, what did you think, Rachel?
I had absolutely no idea.
I didn't either. Okay. Ken Rudin, thanks so much. Dr. Rachel Bloom, Howard Wilkinson, our thanks to you as well. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Find archives online at WVXU.org. I am Michael Monks.